Good afternoon, everyone. I'd like to call to order the first meeting of the E-12 Education Finance Conference Committee for the 2019 session. Welcome, everyone. I'm Representative Jim Dabney. I have the privilege of chairing the E-12 Finance Committee here in the House. Welcome, Senator.
Hello, Representative.
Very good. Would like to start with a couple of brief comments. I imagine Senator Nelson has a couple as well, but then go to some introductions, and then we'll have the commissioner have an opportunity to speak, because we are co-equal branches. They do have an interest in the outcome of our deliberations here. I am excited to be co-chairing this conference committee with Senator Nelson. We both are former teachers, both longtime policymakers with a emphasis on education, both with a real passion for, I think, making sure that Minnesota schools are the best that they can be and best responding to the needs of Minnesota students. Our committee this past session has really focused at putting children, students, and their families at the center of our deliberations, and have built a healthy target and a healthy bill which looks at the child, but the child inside the context of their family, the family inside the context of their community, and the school as a center, a hub for that that energy and that activity, and looking to improve outcomes for all Minnesota students. We do have an emphasis on responding particularly to closing the achievement gap through strategies looking at teachers of color and other proven approaches to enhancing the educational opportunity for all students. Also look at outside of the house view is one that looks outside of the classroom alone, but also looks to things like school-linked mental health, looks at things in which is in a different finance area, also things like homework starts at home in the housing finance area, other approaches that look more broadly, take an umbrella approach in the House. But I'm looking forward to, the next week we have to settle up this bill?
That'd be great.
that's what they say. That's what we say. But, Senator, welcome.
Thank you, Representative Dabney. It is great to be here with you. My apologies. I was speaking to the Homes for All group about the importance of making sure that we have affordable homes, particularly for our students. And I'll just share with you one brief story that I shared with them. When I was a Title I teacher, I had a new student, came to our school in March. He came in March, second grader, think about what's happening in second grade, learning to read better. And it was his fifth school. I was his fifth teacher by March. And that has never left me. And so I knew I needed to fulfill my obligation with Homes for All and pushing that affordable housing tax credit. So my apologies for being late. But I do thank you, Representative Dabney. I know it is really a great thing when we have both of our chairs having had experience teaching in our schools. And both teachers that are committed to our future, knowing that our future depends on our children's future. And so what we've done in the Senate Education Committee is we focus on students, we fund what works. And we do that because we know that education is the great equalizer. So many of the other things that we speak of in these halls and disparities that we wish we could change, so many of those revolve around education and how our students are doing. We know that education is the great equalizer. It, in many senses, is the moral issue of our day, the racial issue of our day, and the economic issue of our day. Those words are posted right on the front of every one of our agendas as we start in the Senate to center us. In addition, in that centering message, we talk about how we will use innovations and incentives to drive better results, because that's what we're all about here. We're going to talk a lot about different visions, but I think at the end of the day, our visions are the same. Our vision is that all of our children would be well prepared for the jobs of tomorrow. And I believe that we can do that. And I look forward to working with the House and Representative Dabney to make that vision become reality. We can no longer talk about it. We have a stubborn, persistent achievement gap. We've been talking about it since I've been in these halls, even when I was a House member sitting at this table on the Education Committee. We do have the ability and the innovations to change that and to reduce, I'd like to say eliminate, that achievement gap. And I believe we can do it. I look forward to working with all of the members here, Representative Dabney, to make sure that the budget that we put forth moves the most in that direction to focus on our students and fund what works.
Thank you very much, Chair Nelson. And it is nice to hear the commonality in goals. Let's hope we can build on that. I'd like to move next to introduction of members, and then after that, introductions of staff. If the members could say a little something about themselves, their background. The senator and I have already identified some of ours, and the sort of communities that you represent. Why don't we start with Senator Wieger?
Well, thank you, Mr. and Madam Co-Chairs. My name's Chuck Wieger, Senate District 43, which is North St. Paul, Maplewood, Oakdale, White Bear Lake, Matamidi, Birchwood, Willerney. I'm in my 23rd year, and prior to that, I served on a school board for 18 years, having chaired the North St. Paul, Maplewood, Oakdale District. So, like you, education's my passion. Students are our future. I look forward to our meetings.
Very good. Thank you. Senator?
Senator Bill Weber, District 22. I represent all or parts of nine counties in southwestern Minnesota. And my previous government experience includes 16 years as a councilman and mayor in Laverne. And this is my seventh year in the Senate. And the first 4 years I served on the E-12 committee. And My background is I'm in real estate and appraisal business back in Laverne, and still maintain my business there while we're up here, and so it makes for a busy 5.5 months, 4.5 months. So,
I bet it does. Thank you very much, Senator. Welcome.
Thank you, State Senator Justin Eichhorn from Grand Rapids, and my passion around education comes from my four kids. I have three that are school age and one that's in preschool right now. He's excited to graduate from his preschool class at the end of May here, so that's where my passion for education comes from, and I'm looking forward to working with all of you.
Very good. Thank you very much. And we move around the table. Chair Joachim.
Thank you, Representative Cheryl Joachim. I represent Hopkins in St. Louis Park. Three kids all in college now, so save your dollars now. One's at med school. but I was spent 9 years on the Hopkins City Council, and this is my fifth year here in the House, and very proud to chair the Education Policy Committee.
Thank you.
Oh, and during the interim, I work as a paraprofessional in special ed.
Representative Sandstead.
I'm Julie Sandstead. I represent District 6A, which is Hibbing, Chisholm, Buell, Nashua, Keewatin, that part of the Iron Range. And my background is education. I'm a teacher for the last 24 years and a mother of three, so fully invested in education.
Thank you. Representative Erdahl, welcome.
Thank you, Ms. Chair. And I'm Dean Erdahl. I'm in my ninth term here. 17 years, and formerly for 35 years, don't add them up though, it's not concurrent that way. 35 years, I was a teacher of American history and civics at New London Spicer High School. Hence, besides having three sons and 11 grandchildren, my interest in education. I also write books. Nine published books, mostly historical fiction on the U.S. Dakota War and the Civil War, and look forward to having a successful conference committee.
Thank you very much. And just to note for the public, Representative Pinto, Chair Pinto, who's chaired our Early Childhood Finance Committee here in the House, is also serving on the Public Safety Conference Committee and has more than a little interest in the Health and Human Services conference committee as well. So he's, I think, tied up with some of those responsibilities right now, but will be joining us, and we'll ask him to introduce himself.
Thank you, Chair. I'll just mention that Senator Jasinski will be sitting in that chair right over there. He's also on the Transportation Conference Committee, which seems to have been an error. It's meeting at the exact same time ours is, but we're going to make it work. So thank you.
Very good. Thank you. If we could go to staff then. Mr. Withers, you want to start us off?
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Jody Withers, House Republican Research.
Mars Beltran, DFL Caucus Research.
Christina Pera, Nonpartisan House Research.
Emily Adrians, Nonpartisan House Fiscal Staff.
Tim Strom, House Research.
Brittany Sunderland, Committee Legislative Assistant for the Education Finance Division.
Sarah Burt, Committee Administrator for the Education Finance Committee in the House.
Greg Marcus, I work with the K-12 Committee in the Senate.
Ed Cook, I'm with the Senate Republican Caucus Research.
Jillian Reynolds, Education CLA.
Jenna Hofer, Nonpartisan Fiscal Analyst with Senate Counsel.
Bjorn Arneson, Nonpartisan Legislative Analyst for the K-12 Committees in the Senate.
Amberi Butler, Nonpartisan Senate Counsel.
Dan Elling, DFL Research, and this is my 22nd legislative session.
Amazing. Thank you all very much. Again, welcome. Before we get started with the commissioner, just a few comments again for the public. Both committees have spent the last several months getting committee overviews on issues, hearing bills, taking testimony, and crafting our different provisions. Because of that, public testimony is more limited at conference committees and more limited to entities with specific expertise in the area that we're discussing. So we'll rely frequently on state agencies, the department, folks like that, to clarify issues before the committee, clarify language differences and that sort of thing, weigh in that way when the House has the gavel. With that, Commissioner. Welcome to the committee, Commissioner.
Thank you very much.
Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Good afternoon. My name is Mary Catherine Ricker, Commissioner of Education, and thank you very much for allowing me to testify this afternoon. Let me start by saying happy Teacher Appreciation Week to all of the educators on the conference committee and those with which you serve in the legislature. Thank you so much for your public service both here and your public service in classrooms. I would also like to thank Representative Dabney and Senator Nelson and all of the conferees for your work to get us to this point with 14 days left in remaining in the session. Thank you for your eagerness to get to work. I know that we will use this time to collaborate and build a budget that supports our Minnesota students and our public schools. Members, you have a letter being passed out to you with feedback that is more detailed. So in the interest of time, I want to take a moment to highlight particular areas of focus in Governor Walz and Lieutenant Governor Flanagan's One Minnesota budget. Our budget prioritizes investing in the basic formula for all students because we know that this is the most flexible funding schools receive and that will allow our school leaders to continue to innovate to meet their students' needs. School leaders have asked for this because they know those investments in teaching and learning they are poised to make meet the needs of students in their school communities. A slight increase of 0.5% to the basic formula each year will not help school districts and charter schools keep up with rising costs and will force them to cut already thin budgets rather than invest in what they see working in their school communities. Our budget makes sure that the state will stop the growth in unfunded special education costs. Due to the increase of students receiving special education services and the increase in the costs of those services and our responsibility to meet their needs, the unfunded state special education costs will grow by $130 million from fiscal year 2019 to fiscal year 2023. This harms the general education opportunities of all students, including those who receive special education services, because students with special needs are part of the general education population too. Our budget keeps preschool doors open for 4,000 children across Minnesota. Under current law, 4,000 pre-kindergarten and school readiness plus spots are set to expire, cutting funding to 80 school districts and charter schools across the state. Districts and charter schools have invested in early childhood educators. They have remodeled early education space, and school communities have quickly come to rely on this access to early learning. Governor Walz and Lieutenant Governor Flanagan, their budget and the House budget protects these programs. This creates uncertainty when these programs are not protected in school district and charter school budgets. And while the Senate provides a one-time increase in early learning scholarship, they provide only enough funds for about 3,000 students, not the 4,000 students currently in voluntary pre-kindergarten. Similarly, the Senate allows another cut to our students to go into effect. The governor and lieutenant governor, as well as the House budget, recognize that our American Indian students deserve our intentional support, and they prevent a 50% cut to tribal contract aid from being enacted. Maintaining this funding is a critical support for our American Indian students. As I've traveled around the state and had the opportunity to visit schools, I've had the privilege to see firsthand the kind of investments our school leaders have made in our students and in their teaching and learning when they have had the funding. Creative programming to engage students, such as the wide-ranging CTE programs I saw in Fairmont and Grand Rapids, the STEM programming I saw in our elementary schools in Wilmer, the American Indian programming that students told me was the reason they're excited to go to school, Turnaround Arts Initiatives in Rochester, Inclusive Special Needs Programming in Deer River, the pre-K investments charter and district schools have made, and full-service community schools like those I saw in Duluth and Rochester. Superintendents have told me they need a healthy increase on the basic formula. During one visit, Deer River Superintendent Matt Gross said, "We can't survive on half and half. There's just no way around it." Schools are innovating to meet the ambitions of their students, and they are relying more and more on the supports offered by the employees of the Minnesota Department of Education in our work. Every day, we receive an average of 3 data requests of varying complexity because educators, families, legislators, and the public are taking a data-driven approach to meeting the educational needs of our students. Maltreatment reports to the department have gone up 66% since 2013 due to an increased focus on technical assistance and training and work from advocacy organizations to inform parents of their rights. Requests for training in restorative practices and social and emotional learning is also consistently on the rise, with 303 school districts and charter schools requesting support from our School Safety and Technical Assistance Center since its inception. Professionals at MDE are proud of the work we do in partnership with the legislature. It requires time and expertise and a continued financial investment in staffing levels at the Minnesota Department of Education. Thank you very much for your time, and I'll stand for any questions if you
Thank you very much. Do any of the members have questions for the commissioner? Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Chair Dabney and Commissioner Ricker. You mentioned several schools you've gone to. I was just wondering if you'd been to Hutchinson.
Commissioner.
Chair Dabney, Representative Erdahl, I have not been to Hutchinson yet, but I will put it on my list.
Representative Erdahl, did she miss one?
Well, yes, Chair Dabney. There's a couple of very unique and successful programs that are underway in Hutchinson.
Outstanding.
And I'd be, you know, they would be honored. I would be honored if you would attend there, and you know, let me know. I would help host you there.
You know, Representative Erdahl, I noticed she also didn't mention Minneapolis.
I'm aware of that.
But you know, I got to tour the great auto program and construction trades program at Roosevelt High School last December. Very impressive, lots of community support. I think Later this month, the auto program is doing a Cars Day at the high school and inviting the community to come and show off some sweet old cars, as well as show off the work that the students are able to get. I was the work the students do. I was struck that when we spoke to the instructor, he said it's a 4-semester program. And he said when he started this, I don't know, 10 years ago or something, don't hold me to that number. The rest of the numbers I know I've got. He would get calls from auto shops in the area, oil change places, the sort of place where you would start right out of high school into the industry. He'd get those calls in the 4th semester. Do you got anybody who's good? And over those 10 years, it's crept back to the 3rd semester and the 2nd semester. And now, if he's got some kid who seems to know which end of a wrench to hold on to in the 1st semester of the class, the places are calling and saying, send him over. We'll teach the kid the rest of what he needs. So that innovative programs, the demand for need, particularly in the career technical education area, you can see around the state.
Very good.
Representative Pinto, if we could just break for a moment, Commissioner, if you just want to introduce yourself, please, since you joined us. Advise people you'd be... You're juggling.
Yeah, my apologies, Mr. Chair, members, for my delay, and members of the audience as well. State Representative Dave Pinto from 64B is my district in St. Paul. I'm so glad to be here. I'm the chair of the House Early Childhood Finance and Policy Division, and a number of proposals that came out of our division are carried in the House bill, and really looking forward to the discussion working with Senator Nelson and her colleagues and my colleagues in the House as well. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Pinto. Other questions for the commissioner from members? Senator Weber.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. One of the things that I continually hear from in my school districts, you know, as it relates to funding in that, are some of the problems that arise from excessive and duplicative rules and reporting rules and regulations from the department. And, Commissioner, have you begun any effort to evaluate the department and perhaps make some substantive changes there that would provide not only regulatory but actually some financial relief to our districts?
Commissioner.
Chair Dabney, Senator, thank you so much for asking that question. As a matter of fact, in the past month, we've begun a review of the sort of required reports or even suggested reports that are annually or occasionally required to be submitted to the Department of Education. And so we're putting together a list of exactly what those reports are, how many of them there are, what the subject matter is, to see where it overlaps and determine if we are going to have the opportunity to work with you to come back to to put together a plan to perhaps streamline some of those reports or see if some of them are needed or some of them could be combined. So thank you very much for asking that. I hope to be working with you and come back with something that I can something comprehensive I can show you that you can react to, ask questions about, and help us perhaps come to a proposal that would hopefully address exactly that.
Senator Weber?
Thank you.
No, thank you.
All right. Any other questions from members for the commissioner? Senator Nelson.
Thank you, Chair Dabney. Commissioner, good to see you again. Appreciate the comments. Just a couple to note. If you could speak to it's been a while since we've seen the governor's budget, and if you could just confirm the cost of the proposal, of the governor's proposal. What is the cost of the governor's education budget?
Commissioner?
Sorry. Chair Dabney, Senator Nelson, Madam Chair, thank you for asking. The current governor's budget is $711 billion for the biennium.
Say Senator? That again, please.
Commissioner?
Let me just make sure. $711 million for the biennium.
Thank you, Commissioner. Senator Nelson.
And for the next biennium in the TAILS?
Chair Dabney, Senator Nelson.
Commissioner, nobody told you there'd be a quiz, did they?
Oh, sorry.
Let me look that number up very quickly for you because I do not have it top of mind. Mm-hmm. Give me just a sec. Thank you.
Okay, now you're ready.
My apologies. No, let me get back to you with that final number to make sure I'm not.
Certainly.
So Commissioner, my question was, and I think you can probably answer the genesis of my question, which I believe, you know, the budget is certainly over $17 billion, but I think you told me the increase in that budget. So the governor's increase in the education budget, I believe, is $711 million over the base, which must put it near, I think the Senate budget is $17.87 million, and so I'm guessing the governor's is just a bit closer, is a bit closer to that $18 billion mark. And my real question was, and I didn't mean to put you on the spot, my real question was something I had asked you in the Senate Education Committee when you presented the governor's budget, and that is how... You know, it's one thing to have a great shopping list of great things that we need and priorities, and that's what this committee is going to do. But here's my bigger question.
Yeah.
How do you pay for those things? So how does the governor's budget, the $711 million of additional new spending, which takes us close to that $18 billion budget, how does the governor pay for that?
Yeah.
Commissioner.
Chair Dabney. Senator Nelson, thank you so much for asking. The governor and lieutenant governor were incredibly careful about presenting a balanced budget, which meant that for every dollar they proposed in spending, they proposed that the other side of the equal sign being equal to that in revenue. And so that is something that they presented intentionally to make sure that they were raising the revenue. And I am working very closely with them on the proposals around their public education bill, and I know that we are working as a team and they are working just as hard on the revenue side of the equation as well. But they were very intentional at presenting a balanced budget.
Senator?
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair and Commissioner. We all appreciate that. In fact, our Constitution demands that we have a balanced budget, so we're so glad about that. But I think what we really need to know, though, is what is it in that revenue side that the governor is proposing that allows the budget that you have described?
Commissioner?
Chair Dabney, Senator Nelson, there are a variety of proposals on the revenue side, and because I worked with the governor and lieutenant governor on putting together the education proposal, I am trusting that the governor and lieutenant governor also worked just as hard putting together the revenue side of the proposal, and so we are working as a team to make sure that budget proposal stays balanced.
Senator?
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair and Commissioner. I do think it's an important question that, to your point, those of us sitting at this table are not necessarily going to be able to answer how this budget that you might be proposing, or the House, or well, we can say the Senate budget doesn't include any tax increases, so we know how that's going to be paid for. That's going to be paid for out of existing revenues. But I do think that's something that is an important part of, you, as you say, the equation. And so we know that the governor and the Speaker of the House and the Majority Leader in the Senate are meeting right now to hash out these questions about what is the budget going to be for the state of Minnesota? Particularly, we're interested in what are our budget targets going to be? What are our joint budget targets going to be? But it is very important as we look at that and as Minnesotans look at that, that they know how are those things going to be paid for? And so we don't know which ones, but we do know that the governor has proposed a 40% increase in the gas tax and reinstating the provider tax and some licenses and tab fees and maybe some other things. But I think we have to weigh all those things. And we also know that as we discuss these important provisions, that we know that eventually, hopefully sooner rather than later, we are going to get those three-way joint budget targets. So we're all talking about what's the same amount of money that we can spend on our students. So I think that's just an important piece of the conversation. I realize we can't have that full conversation now because we're waiting for, you know, those three leaders from each of the separate entities, the House, Senate, and the governor, to make that determination Are we going to tax Minnesotans more? If so, how much? What kind of tax? And how is that going to impact our proposals today? So I appreciate the discussion and know that we'll have more to do on this, but probably after we get some more information from across the street, will we be able to better hash out how these proposals can fit together. So thank you.
Thank you, Senator. Representative Youakim.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I just wanted to thank Commissioner Ricker for coming here, and thank you for echoing the statement a lot of us feel is, you know, we need to listen. We need to listen to our schools. We need to listen to the local control folks saying what they need to do their job and give them the tools they need to do it. I don't know about all of you at the table, but I've been getting emails from all across the state from superintendents talking about the priorities that you've set in the House has set in our budget of the 3% and the 2%. Getting a control over the special education funding and what they need to make their classrooms run. Because we all know that childhood doesn't have a rewind and that we need to make those investments now. I also sit on the tax committee, and we're very proud of the budget that we put together, too. We figured out what Minnesotans need, and then we figure out how to get there. And that's the big part of budgeting and all those pieces fitting together is to make sure that we figure out what the needs are and figure out how we're going to get there. And Minnesotans are smart. They understand the bang for their buck. And out of all the issues that we talk about here up at the Capitol, education is one of those areas where Minnesotans understand you get what you pay for. Yeah.
Commissioner, any response?
Representative Dabney, thank you, Representative Youakim. I am actually eager to get to work with all of you. I am really appreciative of the time today. And actually, because I have had such productive conversations with everyone and feel like we do have such common ground in our aspirations and our expectations for our students and our public schools, that I think we will really use this time to productively collaborate. So thank you very much. It was really important to me to get to see the real programs that have been invested in across Minnesota. I would love to come back another time to talk about my couple visits to Minneapolis and Owatonna or Marshall or Montevideo or Hibbing, South St. Paul, my visits to SPPS, not just as a role in my role as a parent, but there are real investments being made across the state and real ambitions to meet the needs of our students. And I look forward to collaborating with all of you to work through this process.
Thank you
so much for the opportunity.
Certainly. Representative Pinto?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm going to see if I can get – so I just want to build on Representative on Senator Nelson's question, and I suppose also Representative Youakim's question, because I can see we're asking about the cost of these proposals, and that's an appropriate question. I know you're not necessarily a tax or revenue expert yourself, but you are an education expert. And so I guess I want to ask you on the flip side, anything more you may want to add about – the cost of not following through the governor's proposal, perhaps the cost of pursuing more the path that's been laid out by the senator or otherwise, because it does seem to be that there is a cost as well on that side of not educating our kids as well as we might want to, et cetera. I don't want to comment on that, but if you could just talk about any of the costs of not making these sorts of investments, as there's a cost there too. Thank you.
Commissioner?
Chair Dabney, thank you, Representative Pinto. I'll give two examples right now of, I gave a list of some of the investments that have been made across the state of Minnesota as examples, and two examples come to mind right away, and that is the expansion of career and technical education across the state is meeting a demand, to your example, Representative Dabney, of the community, and our school districts and our charter schools are hungry to expand these programs and these opportunities, and that those expansions will be stronger if there is an investment. And if there isn't an investment made, career and technical education programs tend to carry a price tag with them because of the sort of experiential learning you want students to have in those programs. And so you're going to be investing quite a bit in equipment. You're going to be investing quite a bit in expertise. You're going to be investing quite a bit in space and remodeling of programs. So there are some costs to expanding career and technical education, and there are some incredible benefits to expanding it, as our communities have seen. And so if we do not maintain that investment in our general education dollars, which tend to be the dollars that are used to to refresh these career and technical education programs, to grow them after contracting them for so many years, to be able to partner with community members to offer new programming. They're in a, you know, I don't want them to be in a precarious place. I want them to be able to count on the sort of funding that allows them to be sustained and allows them to grow where they have that opportunity to grow. The second place I would mention is the work that our school communities are doing to provide a more inclusive learning environment for our students with special needs. That when I have had the opportunity, like in White Bear Lake, like in Deer River, in other places, to visit school environments where they're really proud of the programming they are providing for their students with special needs. It's inclusive. Inclusive learning environments are staff intensive, which means they cost money. And if we are not continuing to invest in those programs, if we're not providing the sort of money it will take to create those really rich, inclusive environments for our students with special needs, then what we are doing is we're limiting options for that general education that our students with special needs are a part of as well. So those are two examples that come to mind of places where our school leaders and our school communities are creating environments where they are, you know, creating teaching and learning conditions for students to thrive in two different areas, and the sort of budget cuts that they might have to incur would either stunt the growth of those career and technical education programs, or they would result in less creative, less inclusive environment programs for our students.
Thank you, Representative. Senator Wieger, and then Senator Weber again.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Commissioner.
Yes, sir.
What's the top thing we can do to address the achievement gap?
Yes.
Commissioner? No small question, eh?
Chair Dabney, Senator Wieger, thank you for asking. As I have had the opportunity to travel, what I have realized and had the opportunity to see firsthand are school leaders working in their school communities with students, their families, as well as school staff to learn what their students need. And as they have learned what their students need, they are targeting programs for students in their school communities. So an elementary school that recognizes, because of their work in the school community, their look at data, they have, you know, perhaps targeted a rich literacy curriculum because that's the focus they want to have. Other school communities that have recognized that they want to provide specialized pathways for students to pursue those not just a high school diploma, but to also pursue industry certification, and in some cases, a high school diploma, industry certification, and college credit. Our school communities are really paying attention to the needs of students in their school community. And so when we invest in those general fund dollars, what we can expect from them is a real focus on the sort of programming students in our school communities need, as well as the sort of programming that they want, that sort of programming that meets the ambitions our students are bringing to school every day. In some cases, that is a full-service community school concept, where they want to make sure that they have targeted their investment in a rich academic environment, and they are also targeting an investment in a collaboration with the community to create the social and emotional support system that creates those wraparound services, and they're making sure to target their investment in school safety, which also means a welcoming climate for all students. It's another example of what I have heard across the state of Minnesota that our school communities would like to be able to do as they have worked alongside their students, their families, and school staff in the building, recognizing what those specific school communities need.
Senator Wieger, follow up?
No.
All right. All right. Senator Weber.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a couple of things. I want to comment, your career vocational training comments. I appreciate that. I carried legislation a couple of years ago that Senator Nelson included in the budget that has produced a pilot program trying to restore career vocational training back into the school districts in my area. I think the important element of that particular project is not only the fact that there's the state is involved, but rather they have the Southwest West Central Education Co-op has been able to go out and form cooperative agreements between our school districts, between private business, between MNSCU, in order to help produce a number of beneficial programs, and the students are responding tremendously to that. Mm-hmm. And I think that is important to remember. This is not simply a cannot simply be a state-driven policy, but it has to be a broader-based policy, and also to ensure that the careers that we're coming up with, quite frankly, are what the industry needs, and they have a way to be involved, and they have indicated a willingness to be involved. It's also indicated the importance, I believe, Commissioner, of some of the teacher licensing reform that was done. Quite frankly, to quote the words of former Majority Leader Roger Moe, the state of Minnesota not only let up on career vocational training, they just simply walked away from it. And it's important for us to remember that we created that situation and that real vacuum that's out there in that field. And so it's important that we continue providing the flexibility and what have you to our school districts and as we approach these particular issues. Also, though, as we look at the cost that are involved, we all recognize that it takes money. If you look at the tax incidence analysis that has been performed by the Department of Revenue, we also see that the administration's tax proposals create the heaviest burden on the lowest and middle income tax levels from $14,500 to $74,000. Mm-hmm. And as we take a look at that, we have to recognize that and actually try to achieve the goals that we have for our young people without creating the type of financial hardship on some of the people in those income levels that they would create. And so that also has to be in the back of our minds, Commissioner.
Commissioner?
Chair Dabney, Senator, thank you so much for your comments. Our budget proposal for our education priorities absolutely wants to make sure that the investments we are making in students and their families in our public schools targets the resources our school leaders can use to best meet the needs of those students and those school communities. And I really appreciate your comments. Thank you very much.
Any other questions from conference members, committee members? Oh. Back, yeah. Senator Wigger.
Yes, Mr. Chair, sorry, I know we have side-by-sides, but I think about 20 of us, including yourself and some others here, were very much moved by the presentation today by the principal and Kara Levin for the Lucy Lane School and the incredible odds they're up against and doing their very best. And one of the messages, and I'm assuming, Commissioner, you've seen that movie, and if you haven't, you will soon. But there was the concern about implicit bias in tests that we have now. What's your impression as a professional educator? Because we put a lot of stock in terms of results, and we also look at the importance of attendance and other factors that aren't on tests. But for those of us that were there, you came away wondering, is there some additional changes that have to be made for tests? And this was a, North Minneapolis school that is doing their very, very best. But on implicit bias, have you heard of this in our system? And if so, what are you doing about it?
Let me, Commissioner, just pause this for a moment for the folks in the audience to understand what Senator Wigger is referring to. Was a showing this morning of a CARE 11 original documentary called Love Them First that profiles a year at Lucy Laney at Cleveland Park School in the Minneapolis Public Schools system. And it's wonderfully done and inspirational. I actually have been encouraged to show it to the conference committee. That it would be a powerful way to focus our deliberations. but just for the audience to better understand the reference. Commissioner, back to you.
Yes, sir. Chair Dabney, Senator, thank you for your question. I have not had the opportunity to see that movie yet. It is absolutely on my list of things to do, things to see. At this point, I am assuming I'll see it after May 20th, but I do look forward to seeing it. What I can say, as I've had the opportunity to get around to different school communities, I know that our school leaders, our school staff, and our families are using tests or standardized tests as perhaps one measure they are using to determine what program would best meet the needs of their students. They're using some other just-in-time assessments. They're using different observations. They're using different collaboration with families. They're using different opportunities to partner with the community. There are so many data points that our school communities are collecting in determining the sort of programming they want to invest in to meet the needs of our students. That's what I'm most familiar with right now, thanks to the opportunity I've had to get out to different school communities across the state of Minnesota.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Senator Weger,
Chair, brief follow-up. And Commissioner, you're actively listening. And what do you plan to do?
Commissioner?
Senator Weger. Senator Weger,
can you flesh out that
question? Could you finish that question for me, please?
Yes, Mr. Chair, Commissioner, you know, based on what you've heard, do you think there are some needs for reform that, you know, through task force or some way of addressing it? And
Commissioner?
Thank you, Chair Dabney. Thank you, Senator. So, yes, I think there are a number of things. And one, again, the reason that the governor and the lieutenant governor prioritize an increase in the basic funding formula is that one of the things we have heard is that school leaders and school communities know what they want to do on behalf of students, and they need the resources to do them. And so it is with a great deal of trust in those school communities that we want to make sure that we have a healthy increase in our basic funding formula. I also have been a longtime proponent and a believer in the power of full-service community schools, believing that attention to an intentional, high-quality, academically rich environment that is partnered with those wraparound services that address social and emotional learning, as well as making sure that schools are intentionally welcoming to all students, is one way of meeting the needs of a diverse cross-section of students. And Minnesota is very fortunate to have community schools being incubated right now. And we have a number of school communities looking to expand those opportunities. That is one example I am consistently hearing across the state of Minnesota.
Senator?
Mr. Chair and Commissioner, you know, full-service community schools and was the Senate author and local control. But that doesn't change the state test. Or do you see a need?
Yes, sir.
You know, I heard about implicit bias by race in these and frustration from a totally dedicated principal and others. And so the leadership from the state, from us, I think, needs to occur. And just because it's so fresh and raw, the movie and the impact I think it had, you know, it seems like, you know, it's a call for us to do something. So in terms of what you see on testing and how it may impact, the schools and that are raising these concerns.
Yes, sir.
Commissioner?
Chair Dabney, thank you. Thank you, Senator. My apologies for not getting back to that portion of the movie. I am looking forward to seeing the movie, and when I see how they've characterized it and what they're talking about and how they've framed it, I will make sure to follow up with you on that. So thank you very much. I am familiar with research on implicit bias. I am certainly familiar with the conversation in general in public education about where implicit bias is found. And so I will follow up specifically after I see that movie to see how they're framing it and make sure I get to what you're getting at. So thank you for bringing it up.
Thank you, sir. Senator Nelson.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. One of the things, Commissioner, that you visited about was the per pupil funding, and that is what we call the formula funding. It's about half of our education funding is on the formula. Mm-hmm. And typically, we often think that's the gold standard of funding because it treats every student the same regardless of zip code, and it gives schools the most flexibility and to determine how best to use those dollars. But as I was researching formula increases throughout the years, and we've had significant variance in that. Fortunately, we were able to, the analysis did show that from 2003, with all of our school funding, not just the formulaic increase, but the average daily membership, average funding, we have been able to really outpace inflation. We've outpaced the inflationary increases in that. But the biggest piece of that, of our total school funding, is that per pupil formula. So in this was before your time, but I'm sure that maybe the data, maybe you have this data that would be helpful. In 2009, you might recall that there was a 0% increase, not only proposed and passed by both bodies, but enacted. Really, it was a what we would call a real freeze. That was a real education freeze. Mm-hmm. And in subsequent years, we've seen a 1% and a 0%. Fortunately, those often move up as we go through negotiations. But here was my question. So as we look at, like, the 2 years that saw that real education freeze, 2009 passage, and then years where we've seen the most that I've remember seeing on the education formula is in the most recent years, which was 2 and 2 on the education formula. Those were my years here in the Senate. What I want to know is, have you been able to determine, do we have the data that shows how an increase in the formula can relate to student achievement? Intuitively, we think it can. But I just want to know, do we have the data to show that an increase in formula, that half of education funding, what kind of impact does that have on student achievement? Have we been able to do those type of analysis yet?
Commissioner.
Chair Daphne, Senator Nelson, thank you so much for asking. I will get back to you about a specific data or research around investment in increased student funding and better meeting the needs of our students and better outcomes for our students. Absolutely. I know there is research out there, so I will make sure to get it to you.
And Mr. Chair,
yes,
just to clarify, I also want to know, particularly the formula increase, mm-hmm. Because a lot of our discussion swirls around that, and that's only half of our education funding. So if the data is available, it would be very good to know how increases in the formula impact student achievement as opposed to increases in general, the average per pupil formula increase. Thank you.
Commissioner?
Chair Daphne, Senator Nelson, thank you very much for that clarification. I will make sure to look that up. One of the things I know that the state of Minnesota has done since 2003 is also increase the ambition of its expectations on teaching and learning in our schools. Mm-hmm. And so since 2003, in the last 16 years, we are holding our schools and our students and our educators to a higher standard. And there are expectations we have in 2019 that we did not have in 2003. And I think that as we have grown in those expectations, we want to make sure that we're investing in those expectations as well. But I will see if there is data specifically about that formula increase. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. And just to provide context for the audience, we often use the general education formula as kind of the measure of commitment and the like, and we've got some significant differences this year in proposed increases. Senator Nelson is correct that in 2009, you'll recall that was just after the banks drove the economy off the cliff, there was a 0% increase. But at the same time, the federal government, and we anticipated this in our budgeting, came in with $500 million. For Minnesota schools to help maintain the state's commitment to education, but also those recovery funds broadly were a commitment to employment, because we know that people mostly spend money when they've got a paycheck coming in, and that moving that money through the local economy across the state and cities big and small was important nationally. And so to provide some greater context to the audience, that $500 million was a significant commitment from the federal government.
Thank you, sir.
Representative Sandstedt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a kind of a follow-up comment. I think the research data would be great, but having lived through those really tough years and seeing the hard freezes, you know, it's not just data that we need. The reality is, in my classroom, the student numbers, the class sizes grew dramatically, like 43 kids in an elementary classroom and up, and a loss of specialists. You know, districts had to make really, really tough decisions, and all of that impacts a student's educational experience and opportunity to learn. So I think the data is great, but those are just some hardcore realities that underfunding or underinvesting in education plays in the education of their students.
Thank you, Representative Sandstedt. Any last questions for the commissioner before we move to the spreadsheet? Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And, you know, along those lines, I mean, there are many factors, obviously, that determine student success, from funding to, you know, numbers of students in classrooms. There are a lot of things. But interestingly, a few years back, I had a conversation with Posy Solberg, the architect of the Finnish education system, which has been highly successful. And I asked him in my meeting with him, to what do you determine the success that you're having? And he said, three things: the teachers, and the teachers. And I totally agree that maintaining high-quality teachers is the essence of what we need to do to maintain high-quality education in Minnesota. And so I wonder what thoughts you might have in maintaining high-quality teachers in Minnesota.
Commissioner, it's kind of been a thing for you.
Representative Dabney, thank you very much, Representative Erdahl. I thank you so much for sharing that. I have had the opportunity to spend some time with Posy Solberg as well, and I know that you know, I know some of the work in the Finnish system that they did around teaching was they actually reduced the number of teacher preparation institutions they had. You know, Finland is about the size of Minnesota, and I believe they have 7 teacher preparation institutions, and I think we have over 25. And so I know because they had fewer, that they also, they had a pipeline for that. I think some of the things that Minnesota has done that are really enviable is we have started to have a deliberate conversation in the last decade about our pipeline into the teaching profession. We have been more deliberate about diversifying the teaching profession in the state of Minnesota, and that conversation did not exist in the form it exists now 10 years ago, maybe in some pockets even 5 years ago. I really appreciate that conversation that's been driven in Minnesota. We are having a conversation about the training of teachers right now. I think we are poised as a state for the next conversation to have is to have that conversation about the career of teaching we welcome educators into. And I know we have had conversations about induction and mentoring programs, and that's absolutely a great first start. That should be the intro to a career in teaching. But we have yet, as a state, to have as robust a conversation about that career in teaching we're welcoming people into in the same way that we have really grown to be more intentional in our conversation about that pipeline into teaching and about that training and induction. And so I think that is that's the next exciting place for us to launch a conversation. Thank you for asking.
What I can do. Representative Pinto.
This will be quick. There was a comment earlier comparing spending now with 2003, and it had always been my understanding, actually, that our spending, when adjusted for inflation and for pupil growth, is actually still below, and I think significantly so, below 2003, recognizing that then since then there's been many more challenges that our schools are expected to meet. We may not be able to litigate that right now, but that's something that I think we could use information on. Because that was my understanding that actually when you adjust for inflation and pupil numbers, we're actually below and significantly so from where we've been. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
You know, Representative Pinto, I there are people in the audience who know the answer to that question. I'm sure we can get information from them. Senator?
Oh, I just say I do have the data on that using the Department of Education's information, and we'll be glad to pass that out. But starting with 2003, which actually was kind of the year where the state took over all education funding. Remember, they bought down those levies. That was before my time. And were you here then, Representative Dabney? Okay, you recall that. Yep. So just looking from 2003 to 2019, looking on the percent change in state aid per average daily membership, if you look at it without being inflation adjusted, you're correct. There's been a 48.7% increase. However, if you add adjusted for the CPI, there's been a 6.9% increase. So we truly have kept up with inflation. But I think that's an important piece to just to make sure that we have those facts correctly. And then at the bottom, and I'll be glad to pass that out, we have two lists. Again, this is from the Department of Education's website. It shows the state aid per ADM from 2003 to 2019, no inflation adjustment. And those values go from $7,112 average ADM to $10,575. But then, to your point, we always want to factor in inflation because our schools do need to, those costs inflate for our schools as well. And so on the bottom of that chart, we have the state aid per ADM from 2000 to 2019 with the CPI adjustment. Again, these are all off the department's website. Mm-hmm. So in 2003, the average ADM was $7,112, like we mentioned. But when you adjust it for inflation, it would be $7,605. So it is not true to say that we've not kept up with inflation. And I think I really thank you, Representative Pinto, for bringing that forward, because before we can even begin to talk about where we need to go with education, we should not be having these fights about saying, well, you haven't kept up with the cost of inflation. But we'll be glad to get this so out so everybody has that, and then we can start on the same place, and then we can move forward. So we'll be glad to get this out to the committee.
Thank you. I look forward, Mr. Chair, I look forward to receiving information from the audience who can provide some information on this as well. Thank you.
Very good. I'm sure they've heard us. Senator Jasinski, welcome. You'll be driving back and forth between here and the Transportation Committee, I understand?
I think there's 86 steps between me and this meeting. So every 15 or 20 minutes, I'm hoping to lose weight between now and the end of session, just in these two conference committees.
We'll see what we can do to help.
I apologize for my vacancy, but I'm going back and forth to Transportation. I am the Vice Chair of Transportation, so I'm going back and forth. So I apologize, but I got two people making sure I know what's going on, so thank you.
No need to apologize. If you just wanted to introduce yourself briefly, everyone else.
Senator Don Jasinski, Faribault District 24, so Faribault-Tonawisica, as well as the Minnesota Academies. I'm happy to be here on education, and I look forward to getting some resolve to our states to make sure our kids get as much education funding as they possibly can. So thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you, sir.
Commissioner Innie, if we go quickly, I think we won't get any more questions, and you can provide any closing comments you might have.
I just want to thank everybody, Representative Dabney, Senator Nelson, and again, to all the conferees. Thank you so much for the time this afternoon. I really appreciate it. I really know that thanks to your eagerness to get started, we're going to have a great opportunity to collaborate and build a budget that supports Minnesota students and our public schools. And again, happy Teacher Appreciation Week to the educators on the conference committee, as well as those with which you serve. And thanks. I look forward to getting the chance to work with you again.
Thank you very much. And congratulations to, is it Ms. Davis, the Teacher of the Year?
Yes.
Wonderful.
South St. Paul math teacher, Jessica Davis.
Jessica Davis, math and computer science.
Yes.
Thank you very much.
We'll be following up with her, right?
Very good. We'll reach out and certainly extend our congratulations. With that, members, I would like us to turn to the spreadsheet, so that we can begin exploring the differences between the two bodies' bills. There are some different priorities, perhaps. There is a tab in your binders, conference spreadsheets. Oh, well, there are. Okay, in the House side there is. I don't know what the Senate binders look like. Chair Nelson.
Well, Senator or Representative Dabney, over in the Senate, it's called General Fund Aid Appropriation Summary, I think is the one that you're looking at. Okay. And up at the top left, it should say 2019 Legislature E12 Education Committee General Fund Aid Appropriation Summary. Is that what you're looking at?
I'm looking at something like that. Yeah, is that it? Yes. So I'm looking instinctively at Ms. Adrian's.
Mr. Chair, Madam Chair, members, if it is okay with the committee, my Senate counterpart, Ms. Hofer, and I will orient you to all the documents that we have, and then we will go back and forth explaining the detail that's within each of the documents.
Thank you very much.
Okay. Mr. Chair and members, you do have three documents in your binders. As Chair Nelson was saying, there should be one that's really tiny font that's the general aid document, and so that has everything. You should also have a levy document, and then the one that Ms. Hofer and I will start with is it is a little bit bigger font, and it's the change item summary. And it's three pages. So if you could all find that, and maybe your ruler, if you have that in your binders as well, might be useful as we go through the document.
And Ms. Adrians, you know my habits. If members look in the upper right-hand corner, check me on this. It should be dated and timed 5/13/2019 at 7:17 p.m. That's the document we're looking at now.
Sure, that's correct.
It's a good day. Strong start.
You've got it. Members, I also just want to point out before we get into the detail of it, so for this document in particular, there is color coding to help sort of orient you to the different positions. So you'll see that the House has a bluish tint to any provisions that are House only, and then the column that is the House provisions, the amounts. The Senate is more of an orange color.
Ms. Adrian, Senator.
I absolutely have to make, I can see my folks here scratching their heads.
We're
so
black and white.
I just want you to make sure to know the Senate got black and white versions, always conserving that dollar. So you're not going to be able to talk to us about color, I'm afraid. We are black and white on this side. So sorry.
Oh, Madam Chair and Mr. Chair and members, I'm so sorry. Usually it's the opposite. Usually the Senate has the really fancy color copies in the House. So
just didn't quite work.
You can be fancy when there are fewer, right? half the copies.
You don't need the color coding anyway. It's unnecessary.
All right.
Mr. Chair, color matters.
Color, there
yes,
you go.
Color matters. We just happen to have a black and white print here.
All right.
Luckily, it also says House and Senate, so that will help as well. So what this change item summary document is, this shows all of the programs that have been changed one way or another by either body, and just so it's a little bit easier to go through and see the changes without using the bigger spreadsheet. But if any questions do come up, we have the other tracking to reference, and Ms. Hofer and I can help orient between the two documents.
And I would invite, if I may, Ms. Adrians, I'd invite members to ask questions as we go along, because I think if we hold them all to the end, it's only going to be harder to have a coherent conversation and for people to recall what their question was. Ms. Adrians, thank you.
Absolutely. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And so the first column in this document is the line number, so we'll reference that as we go through it. The article of the bill that each change shows up in, so whether it's Article 1, Gen Ed, Article 2, Education Excellence, and so forth, is the second column. The comparison column, the third from the left, this will help sort of show if it is a House provision, a Senate provision, or a similar provision. And now similar does not necessarily mean that they are alike. It just means that it is something that was changed by both the House and the Senate, but in different ways. And then the program descriptions in the middle, and then the House numbers, the Senate numbers, and then the difference between the two are in the three columns way over to the right. So we will get started if everybody's prepared. On line 8 at the very top, this is the formula allowance increase. And what the House does, the House bill increases the formula by 3% and 2%. in the 2021 bienniums. And I'm sorry, Mr. Chair, I should also mention, we'll mostly be referencing the 2021 biennium, but the 22 and 23 are the tails, and those are in this document as well. And then any changes that have been made to fiscal years 18 and 19 show up as well. So the increase for the House proposal of the 3 and 2% increase, that's an increase of about $521 million. The Senate increase for the formula is 0.5% in both years, and that cost is about $96 million. On line 9, that these are the next couple of provisions are House provisions only. The House bill increases the amount of revenue that is reimbursed from 35% to 50% of qualifying expenses for the Career and Technical Equalization Aid. That is just over $12 million. On line 10, the House bill changes the early middle college program to allow permanent access for students who are not yet 22 years old. That's $136,000. On line 11, the House increases the English learner revenue. It increases the basic revenue factor from $704 to $740. This costs $4.4 million in the 2021 biennium. On line 12, the House picked up a governor's recommendation for the kindergarten student accounting simplification. What this does is it just uses language to conform to the consolidation of the kindergarten disabled students into the general kindergarten pupil count, and this cost is $202,000. On line 13, the House does referendum equalization. It lowers the referendum levy by $25 million per year starting in fiscal year 21. But pays for it with state aid money. So the cost in the first biennium is $22.5 million and then $50 million in the tails. And you'll note that the Senate also has a similar proposal, but it shows up in the Senate tax bill. And so the amounts for the Senate bill are in brackets, and so that means that this is not in this bill but in another bill, and that spending is just under $15 million in the 2021 biennium. On line 14, the House has a provision for pregnant and parenting pupil transportation at a cost of $112,000. On line 15, the House, this is the voluntary pre-kindergarten school readiness plus program. The House bill maintains the existing slots rather than to let those, it's about $4,000. Or I'm sorry, 4,000 spots that would go away for the fiscal 20 year, and the cost is just over $47 million.
Mr. Chair and Madam Chair, thank you. I will now continue with the first of the Senate-only provisions in Article 1, Gen Ed, and Ms. Adrians and I will flip back and forth through these, so bear with us. Line 16 is a Senate-only provision to the Enrollment Options Transportation Program. This would modify the eligibility for PSEO students to receive reimbursement for their transportation to and from a PSEO program. It would change the eligibility from a student whose family is at 100% of the federal poverty guideline to students who qualify for free and reduced price lunch, which is 185% of the federal poverty guideline. And this is approximately $3.5 million in the 2021 biennium. On line 17 is another Senate-only provision. This would extend non-public pupil aid for guidance and counseling services to students enrolled in tribal contract schools in both elementary and secondary schools. This would be $188,000 in the 2021 biennium. On line 18 is another Senate-only provision. This would allow non-public students in 10th grade to enroll in CTE PSEO courses. Under current law, only public school 10th grade students are allowed to enroll in CTE PSEO courses. The cost for this provision is $10,000 per year or $20,000 per biennium. On line 19 is a Senate-only provision for shared time aid. This would allow non-public students to participate in general education courses from anywhere. They do not necessarily need to be at the public school as current law prescribes. This would be $319,000 in the first biennium and $889,000 in the tails. On line 20 is another Senate-only provision. This would provide sparsity revenue to Carlstad Elementary School. This would be $147,000 in the first biennium, and because this is paid on the 90-10 shift, you'd see a small cleanup payment in the tails of $8,000. And then we are on to the Education Excellence article, which is article number 2. The first few provisions here are in both the Senate and the House bills, but to different degrees. So the first provision on line 21 is a certificate incentive grant program. In both the House and the Senate bill, there are cancellations. In the House bill, $860,000 is canceled, and that's reappropriated in fiscal year 2020. In the Senate bill, $861,000 is canceled. On line 22, both bills would provide additional funding to the Math Corps program. In the House bill, it's a $1 million in the first biennium. In the Senate bill, it's $300,000 in the tails. On line 23 is the first of, it'll be three museum changes you'll see. Two of them are similar. So for the first one, it's the Children's Museum of Southern Minnesota. Both the House and the Senate provide $100,000 in the first biennium. The House provides $100,000 in the tails, and the Senate only provides that funding in the first biennium. On line 24 is another museum, the Grand Rapids Children's Museum. Again, both chambers provide $62,000 in the first biennium. Only the House provides $62,000 in the tails. On line 25 is the Serve Minnesota at Tribal Contract Schools. This would provide reading and math course services to students enrolled in tribal contract schools. The House provides $832,000 per biennium. The Senate provides $416,000 in the 2021 biennium only. On line 26 is the Vocational Enrichment Grant. This would be a grant to the Fairmont School District to provide welding and construction courses outside the regularly scheduled school day. The House provides $200,000 in both bienniums, and the Senate provides $87,000 in fiscal year 2020 only. And I'll turn it over to Ms. Adrians to go through some of the House provisions.
Ms. Adrians.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. On line 27, this is a House-only provision. This is an increase for Achievement and Integration Equalization Aid. It's $345,000 in the 2021 biennium. On line 28, the House bill has a provision to fund after-school community learning program. It's $4 million in 2021 and $5 million in the tails. On line 29, the House provides funding for civic education grants at $250,000 for each biennium. On line 30, the House increases the concurrent enrollment program by $6 million in 2021 and then by $8 million in the tails. On line 31, the House funds an initiative for full-service community schools. The amount is $15 million in 2021 and $25 million in the tails. On line 32, the House funds a Girl Scouts Connect Z program. It's one time at $2.8 million. On line 33, the House has an initiative for the Minnesota Center for the Book at $250,000 in both bienniums. On line 34, the House funds, or increases actually, the Minnesota Principals Academy program with an additional $100,000 for each biennium. On line 35, the House bill increases funding for the Minnesota Youth Council of $500,000 for each biennium. On line 36, this is the third museum increase that Ms. Hofer referenced. This is in the House bill only, and it's an increase for the Works Museum in Bloomington. It's $100,000 in each biennium. On line 37, this is a provision that was in the governor's bill as well. It's an initiative to eliminate off-grade testing, and it causes a one-time reduction of $15,000 in 2021 because of a reduced cost of analysis for the statewide testing program. On line 38, the House has a provision for students experiencing homelessness. These grants are funded at $1 million in each biennium. On line 39, the House maintains the 2019 funding levels for the tribal contract schools. So this would have the funding remain at the 2019 number of $3,230 per pupil, rather than be reduced, which would happen in current law, down to $1,500 per pupil in fiscal year 2020 and later. The cost of doing this is $3.5 million in the 2021 biennium. And then Ms. Hofer will take over the Senate provisions.
Ms. Adrians, just before Ms. Hofer does that, can you just explain kind of the unique situation of the tribal contract schools for the audience who may not be familiar with that?
Mr. Chair, just that the funding levels were set in current law to be reduced for the fiscal year 2020. So currently, these schools receive just over $3,000 per pupil, and as I said, the cost would go down to $1,500 per pupil. So it would be cut by more than half per student. And so what the House bill does is attempts to maintain the current level of funding so that they don't receive that reduction in funds. I hope that helps.
And these are Minnesota students attending Bureau of Indian Education programs on a couple of the reservations in northern Minnesota. Do I have that right?
Yes, I believe that's correct, Mr.
Thank you. Senator Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Ahrens?
Adrians.
Ms. Adrians, yes. Ms. Adrians, just for some clarification, I believe, if I heard you correctly, that current law had set this to expire or to be reduced to $1,500.
Ms. Adrians?
Yes, Madam Chair. Current law would set the funding levels to be reduced starting in fiscal year 2020 down to that $1,500 per pupil level.
Senator Nelson?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just to follow up, if I remember correctly, they were increased in the last budget. That was a one-time increase. I think that was a Governor Dayton's proposal. Is that correct? There was a one-time significant increase, and that's why it would be reduced. Is that correct?
Ms. Adrian?
Mr. Chair and Madam Chair, I believe it was over two biennium. The increase was set to go over the two biennium.
And
Senator Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Maybe this is a question for the chair or someone else. And why was that just a short two biennia investment?
The Dayton administration doesn't seem to be well represented here.
today.
Exactly. I can't answer. I know there was a lot of conversation on the House side that these were Minnesota kids, that the federal government does not fund these schools to the same level that Minnesota funds its traditional public schools or its charter schools, and that there was seen a value of closing that gap. Because they're Minnesota residents. Yes. And so the value was there. Why it was limited to 4 years, I don't know.
Thank you. That was my question, really. What was it, to be a pilot, to see if there was improvement in scores? I just wasn't quite sure why it was a temporary increase. So we'll have to continue on. Thank you.
There you go. All right. Thank you. And you just passed it over to Ms. Hofer. And am I saying that right?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay, I'll get it wrong in the future. Don't worry. But Ms. Hofer, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So the first of the Senate-only provisions in Article 2 is on line 40. It's the Collaborative Summer Intensive Program. This is a grant program to six school districts in northeastern Minnesota. That would be Ely, St. Louis County, Mesabi East, Chisholm, Mountain Iron Buell, and Hibbing to provide a three-week collaborative summer program to students. and that would be $802,000 in fiscal year 2020 only. On line 41 is the Construction and Skilled Trades Counseling and Report. This is for transfer to the Department of Labor and Industry to conduct a report on the safety of youth participating in construction and skilled trades internships, and also to incorporate counseling for construction and skilled trades into career counseling at the high school level. This would be $150,000 in the 2021 biennium only.
Ms. Hofer, can I stop there just either to you or to Chair Nelson? I'm just unclear on this proposal. Is the report to be on the impact of the counseling on students choosing construction trades? Just can somebody here help me better understand this proposal?
Mr. Chair, I can give you a brief summary. The proposal is to do two things. One, add construction careers into the career planning pathways that our schools already do. As you know, we have a crisis in the construction trades. Mm-hmm. And we have a workforce crisis in general. Mm-hmm. And then secondly, to have the commissioners of both the Department of Labor and Industry and Education look at how could a student have internships in the construction industry while they're in high school? What kind of is that possible? Mm-hmm. What type of safety things? We have to just have some real good information on that. And Ms. Hofer, do you have something else to add that I may not have added?
Ms. Hofer?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think that was a clear, concise description of the program. So I would say that the $25,000 in each of the first 2 years was to go to the Department of Labor and Industry to collaborate with the Department of Education to help incorporate information about construction and skilled trades into career counseling services. And then $100,000 of that total $150,000 appropriation was for the reporting on incorporating internships for students in the construction and skilled trades areas and what sort of safety requirements would be necessary to ensure that students would be able to participate.
Thank you very much. Please continue.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chair. On line 42 is a grant for educational stability for students in foster care. This would help provide transportation for students who are in foster care to their resident district. This is $1 million in fiscal year 2020 only. On line 43 is the Online Access to Music Education Grant. This would be a grant to the McPhail Center to provide music education remotely. And this would be $200,000 per biennium. On line 44 is the PTech school grants. So these would be grants to assist PTech schools with startup costs and ongoing costs for supporting staff. And this would be $3 million in each biennium. On line 45 is the Race to Reduce grant. This is $100,000 in the 2021 biennium only. On line 46 is the Reading Corps. The Senate bill would provide an additional $6,000 in the first biennium and an additional $309,000 in the tails. On line 47 is the Rural CTE Consortium grants. The Senate bill would ensure that funding goes to the consortiums that were listed in the 2017 bill. I believe it was the original intent that the program provide grants to certain cooperatives in both southern Minnesota and northern Minnesota, and that was for the 18-19 biennium and then the 2021 biennium. The intent was not to provide those ongoing, and so this would just better align the language with the original intent, and as a result would remove the base for that in fiscal year 2022 and beyond, which would be a savings of $6 million per biennium. And that gets us through the first page. So if members would turn to the second page, we'll continue with the Senate proposals in Article 2. So the first one on the top of the page is line 48 to the Santa Foundation. This would be a grant for $2 million per year. I'm sorry, for the biennium. On line 49 is the singing-based pilot program. The Senate bill would reduce the fiscal year 2018 appropriation to Rock and Reed for $230,000 in savings in the 18-19 biennium. On line 50 is the Starbase Minnesota grant program. The Senate bill would cancel the unexpended funds at $1.35 million for fiscal year 2018 and then remove Starbase from the base, which is a savings of $1 million per biennium. On line 51 is the Vision Therapy Pilot Program. This is a grant from, it would have been fiscal year 2017 to the Centennial School District, and the grant was never executed. The school district didn't accept the funds. This was also in the 2018 bill last year that was vetoed by Governor Dayton. This would be a savings of $200,000 in fiscal year 2018. And then I will turn it over to Ms. Adrians to go through the others.
Mr. Chair and members, on line 52, this is a provision that is similar in both the House and the Senate bills. There is a cancellation of the 18-19 appropriation. The House cancels $1 million, and the Senate cancels $1.5 million. The difference is the House reappropriates the $1 million within the Northwest Regional Partnership Program, and then the Senate does not. On line 53, the House has a provision for American Indian Teacher Preparation Grants for $1.2 million in each biennium. On line 54, these are all within the teacher's article of the bill. The House has a provision for the Collaborative Urban Educator Grants, the Q Grants. The House increases funding for these grants of $4 million in the first biennium and $10 million in the second biennium. And then the House also transfers the funding for this program out of the general fund and into the special revenue fund. On line 55, the House has a provision for hiring bonuses for teachers. It's called Come Teach in Minnesota, and it is funded at $2.1 million in each biennium. On line 56, the House has a provision for inclusive school enhancement grants. These are to help improve the school climates, and the funding is $5 million in the first biennium and $6 million in the second. On line 57, the House funds Minnesota Council on Economic Education at $1 million in each biennium. On line 58, the House increases funding for paraprofessional pathway to licensure program, also known as Grow Your Own. The increase is $7 million in each biennium. On line 59, the House cancels funding for the 18-19 biennium of $400,000 for the statewide concurrent enrollment teacher training program and puts that funding into the 2021 biennium. And Mr. Chair and members, I should add that Ms. Hofer and I keep talking about some of these cancellations and reappropriations. So often if a program has funding left over at the end of a biennium and they still have purposes that they would like to use the funding for, they sometimes request to have the money canceled from one biennium but then reappropriated so that they have more time to execute the funding, the program, and a longer time to use the funds for the programs. So this statewide concurrent enrollment teacher training program is one of those examples. On line 60, the House has a number of provisions that are for sort of a bundling of funding for teachers of color. And so on line 60, this is for the recruitment and the retention of quality teachers of color. And the funding levels are $3 million in the first biennium and $4 million in the second. On line 61, this is a report for this program to see how it's going at $15,000 in the first biennium. So every other year, the hope is to get a report to assess whether or not the program is doing what it is intended to do. And the cost is $15,000 for each of those reports. And then on line 62, there is funding for a Tribal Nations Education Committee of $300,000 for each biennium. And then Ms. Hofer will take over the Senate provisions.
Ms. Hofer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. On line 63 is the first of the Senate-only provisions in Article 3, Teachers. The Senate would provide an increase of $25,000 per year for the Agricultural Educators Grant. On line 64 is the Alternative Teacher Prep Grant. The Senate would provide $1 million in fiscal year 2020 only. This would be for transfer to the Department of Higher Ed for Alternative Teacher Prep Grants. On line 65 is the Curriculum Best Practices Sharing. The Senate would provide $500,000 per biennium for this, and this would go to one of the intermediate school districts to develop a website that would allow teachers to share examples of curriculum they've developed that's aligned to the state academic standards, and then that would be posted online, and it would be an open resource for teachers across the state to access.
Ms. Hofer, if you can pause for a moment, please. Representative Sandstead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. On that programmer on line 65, how does that differ from what is currently what the department already has, or where teachers can kind of go into a depository of curriculum?
Ms. Hofer, are you the best person to answer that, or someone else?
You know, I don't actually have, Mr. Chair, the technological background to tell you what the difference is between the two. But what I can tell you is that there is currently an intermediate district, and off the top of my head, I forget the number, but they do run a website right now that I believe is linked on the Department of Education's website. I think that's correct, though I'm sure someone will correct me if I'm wrong. And right now, teachers can go and access this, and this would broaden the pool of resources that teachers would have, and it would also, I believe, add a feedback loop. So teachers could comment on whether or not they found the lesson valuable, and that way other teachers would have access to those comments to see how it worked in a real classroom.
Senator Nelson, is that?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That describes the program exactly correctly, so that it's broader to teachers throughout the state, and it does provide that continuous feedback loop. What I cannot tell you is what exactly the department is doing now, or if and this would be hosted on the department website, I believe, as well. So I think we'll need some clarification on what the current structure is. Yeah.
So this is or is not a current program? I'm a little fuzzy.
This is a new program. We do not know, to your question, how it might or might not duplicate what's on mm-hmm. the department website already.
All right. Representative Sandstead?
Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Hofer?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. On line 66 is the Literacy Professional Development Grant for teachers at $500,000 per biennium. This would allow teachers to be reimbursed for participating in certain literacy professional development courses.
Ms. Hofer, I think just to complete the last conversation, Senator Nelson, you got news?
Yeah, just to clarify a little bit. So it is, it's District 287 that currently does this.
The curriculum best practices sharing.
This would allow them to expand, and it would allow two additional things statewide, and then also the continual feedback loop. How did teachers rate this?
Is it a closed, is it a subscription service? No, I'm not understanding the statewide piece, because it's like on the internet, right?
It's a subscription service right now.
It is.
We would
okay.
like to provide this to all teachers throughout the state, okay. so every teacher has access to this,
okay.
and every teacher can then rate, you know, how did this work? And it will help teachers in going forward determining which of these they'd like to try.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Ms. Hofer, back to you. You were on line 66, I believe.
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I had just described line 66, which was the Literacy Professional Development Grant for teachers at $500,000 per biennium. And under this grant program, teachers would be able to seek reimbursement for participating in certain literacy professional development courses. And with that, I can turn it over to Ms. Adrians to cover Article 4, Special Education.
Thank you, Ms. Adrians.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And members, on line 67, the House has a program to provide paraprofessional training. It would provide paraprofessionals with 8 hours of training and to work with students with disabilities. And the cost is just over $14 million in the each biennium. On line 68, this is a fix of sorts for Duluth and Monticello to provide supplemental aid for issues that both districts have faced for special education, and the cost is $2.4 million in each biennium. On line 69, the House increases funding and does some reform within the formula for special education, and the increased funding is almost $118 million in the 2021 biennium and just over $173 million in the TALES. And on line
Ms. Adrians, if I can ask you to pause for a moment. Sure. Representative Youakim.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Adrians, with that, too, I know we'd freeze the gap, the cross subsidy where it's at, and make some investments to lower it. Remind me again, what if we did nothing, what the increase to school districts would be on special education this next biennium? I know we've talked about where that curve is going. There was a number you threw out, and I lost it in my notes.
Ms. Adrian?
Mr. Chair and Representative Youakim, I don't have all the numbers in front of me. I mean, my understanding from testimony that we heard in committee is that the cross-subsidy is indeed growing at a pace that is hard for the districts to handle. And so what this funding attempts is to help to sort of stifle the growth of that cross subsidy, so it reduces it by a factor and helps adjust the formula a bit so that it helps the districts kind of get a hold of the increasing special education costs that are hitting them at a pretty rapid pace.
Thank you.
Representative, now I'm doing it to everybody. Representative Youakim.
Well, I did used to work in the Senate.
So there you go.
No, I just thank you. I just know this is one of the top two things I've heard from districts across the state. So thank you for explaining that.
Thank you. Ms. Adrians.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We will move from the special ed article to the safety article 5 on line 70. Both the House and the Senate increase funding for the Safe Schools Aid formula just at different levels. So for the adjustments to the Safe Schools revenue, the House increases it by just over $24 million, and the Senate provides an increase of $74.5 million in the 2021 biennium. The House has additional funding in the TALES for Safe Schools, and the Senate is just for the 2021 biennium. On line 71, the House has a provision to address to put together a working group to look at the health disparities in educational achievement, whether or not there's a link there for children of color. The cost of that is $143,000 in the biennium. That's a one-time only funding provision. On line 72, the House provides funding for innovative mental health grants. This is to help to assist some of the intermediates with their costs. This is $5.4 million in each biennium. On line 73, the House provides funding for the Support Our Students initiative. This is $10 million in both biennium. On line 74, the House provides funding for Title IX training and compliance efforts. This is just under $300,000 in each biennium. On line 75, there's a House-only provision to provide funding for trauma-informed school incentive aid. This is $6 million in each biennium. On line 76, I will turn it over to Ms. Hofer.
Ms. Hofer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. On line 76, you'll see the school-linked mental health grants. This would allow students access to mental health services through telemedicine. You'll see there's a note there. The House does carry a similar proposal to the Senate. However, the House carries this proposal in the Health and Human Services bill, so you'll see that the amount is bracketed. It's not included in the totals, but we thought the committee might be interested in knowing of a comparative proposal. The Senate proposes $5 million per biennium for school-linked mental health grants. On line 77 is the Suicide Prevention Training for Teachers grant. The Senate proposes $480,000 in fiscal year 2020 only to provide teachers with training and resources on suicide prevention in the classroom. And I'll turn it over to Ms. Adrians for line 78.
Ms. Adrians.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, starting on line 78, the House bill has a number of adjustments to the long-term facilities maintenance revenue. The first is on line 78. This is a building age adjustment. It is intended so that districts, when they build new buildings, they don't get penalized for the average age of their of all of their district-wide buildings going up because of that new building. So this assists with that, and the cost is $45,000 in the first biennium and $100,000 in the second. On line 79, this is an adjustment to the LTFMR to provide additional funding to cooperatives, and this is $139,000 in the first biennium and $278,000 in the second. On line 80, this is an adjustment for Hopkins. This funding, it authorizes the Hopkins School District to levy in order to account for the merger of a charter school within the school district, and the amount is $50,000 each year starting in fiscal year 21. Even though it's it allows the district to levy, it's paid for with state aid rather than increasing the levy. And then I will turn it back over to Ms. Hofer.
Ms. Hofer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The Senate has one proposal on line 81 in the facilities article. It's an increase to the telecommunications access aid of $1 million per biennium. And I'll turn it over to Ms. Adrians for the nutrition article.
Ms. Adrian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The House has a number of good provisions here. Or provisions, I shouldn't say.
No, I think good. I think good works.
On line 82, this is in the nutrition and libraries article. The House provides funding for a program called Breakfast After the Bell to provide a school breakfast at the cost of $4.3 million in 2021, and then in the tails it's $5.8 million. On line 83, the House increases and makes some adjustments to the library funding formula. The increase for the basic system support is $7.6 million in the first biennium and $8 million in the second biennium. We'll move to the early childhood article, Article 8, in the House bill on line 84. This is a provision that is similar. Both the House and the Senate bills cancel an amount that would be remaining in the early learning scholarships, and the House cancels $9.5 million from the 18-19 biennium. The Senate cancels $9.65 million. I think the discrepancy might be that the Senate had a more updated number by the time they put their bill together. And then the House funding for the early learning scholarships is just over $25 million in the first biennium and then $9.6 million in the second biennium. And the Senate funding increase is $44.5 million in the first biennium, and then they remain at base for the second biennium. And both the House and the Senate transfer funding for this program from the general fund to the special revenue fund. That was an initiative that was in the governor's bill as well.
Representative Pinto.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just want to make sure I understand something. Ms. Adrians, you talked about the amount in the second biennium remaining at base, and I just want to clarify, and this is true in both bodies, bills, that when there's that higher amount in the first biennium and the lesser amount in the second, it goes, the funding goes back down to that second amount. So I guess it sort of returns to base rather than remaining at base, if I'm making sure that I'm understanding you right. This is with regard to the Senate bill, and obviously in the House it's the $25.6 million on top and then jumps back down to $9.6 million above the base. Am I saying all that correctly?
Ms. Adrians, can you help us better understand that?
Mr. Chair and Representative Pinto, yes, I believe what you're saying is correct. It can be a little bit tricky. Sometimes zero might mean that the funding was only one time and then there is zero funding for that program. Okay. But if that program has base funding currently, the zero would mean it would just go back down to base. So any number that you see in here is an adjustment to the base funding. So yes, so for the House provision, the increase of $9.65 million is above base in the tails, and for scholarships, the Senate number of zero, it doesn't mean it eliminates the program, it just means that the funding goes back to the base funding that is currently in law for 2022 and 2023.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Ms. Adrians.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. On line 85, the House only has a provision. This is for a college savings account pilot program to provide funding for children and born in the city of St. Paul. The amount is $500,000 in the first biennium only. Here's an example where there's no funding for the TALES, and so there is no funding for the program at this point in the TALES. On line 86, the House has a provision to increase funding for the Metro Deaf Charter School. This is to allow children ages 3 and 4, I believe, to participate in the programming that the school offers, and the funding amount is not part of the formula. It's just a grant amount of $200,000 for each biennium. On line 87, the House only has a provision for Reach Out and Read Minnesota. This would provide books when children go for their well checks at the doctor's office. It's $205,000 in the 2021 biennium only. And on line 88.
Ms. Adrians, I'm going to, since you're reaching the end of an article there, I'm going to ask you to pause. Representative Sandsteed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just to back up a little bit, line 81, I think it is, the telecommunications access aid. Can we get a little background on that?
Ms. Hofer?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Sandsteed. In current law, districts do receive telecommunications access aid, and the program has a couple different components. So when a district has costs for, say, internet access or like modems or routers, they can be reimbursed in a couple of ways. So first, there are federal E-rate dollars, which you may have heard of. So that's a federal reimbursement program that provides money to districts and charter schools and non-public schools for any sort of costs within one or two different categories. And then this telecommunications access aid is a comparable state program. So after the federal E-rate program reimbursement is credited to the schools, then the state would come in and provide a portion of that cost as well. I believe currently districts do not receive full reimbursement for those costs at the state level. I believe it's around 40% that's it's prorated right now. Yep. Thank you, Mr. Arneson. He does confirm that it's about 40% prorated right now. And that's because the legislature sets the amount in session law that the Department of Education can reimburse to districts. So right now, their cost for telecommunications access will come in higher than the appropriation that's listed here. And so what the Senate proposal would do is a couple of things. So first, it provides additional aid to the program, so it's an additional $500,000 per year to help cover some of those state costs. But it also removes a requirement that districts be a part of a telecom cluster. And this was from a number of years ago. Districts would join together in order to get a lower rate on their telecommunications access. And the Senate bill would propose removing that cluster requirement. And for those that were not a part of a cluster, there was essentially a copay, if you will. So if they weren't a part of this cluster, then they would have to pay the first $16 out of pocket, and then the state would come through and reimburse what was left of that. So this would remove that portion, but then also increase the aid to that program. So does that answer your question?
Representative Sandsby? Yes. Ms. Hofer, is there a cost savings to a district being part of a cluster?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think it would really depend based on the district. We do know that over the years, the cost of telecom has come down. Mm-hmm. And so the amount that a district is reimbursed does vary from year to year. And the Department of Education does have a nice spreadsheet on their website that does show the amount that each district is reimbursed. So I think if we look back, you'll see that it does vary by district. Though you do can see, too, on there which districts are not part of the cluster. And I think some have reported that they can receive lower-cost telecommunications equipment if they're not part of the cluster, but I don't think it would be fair to say that that's true for every district. I think it's going to depend in part on where you are in the state mm-hmm. and the type of services that are available to the district there.
All right. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Weber, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. If I remember correctly, I have to dust off my memory bank here a little bit, but would this be the same credit that, quite frankly, was substantially reduced during the budget deficits of a number of years ago, and that, quite frankly, has never been totally restored to the school districts? Is this the same one?
Ms. Hofer, I'm looking around.
Mr. Chair, I can try to tackle that question. Okay. I was not around during those years. Unfortunately, I don't have the historical memory to be able to tell you that, but we could certainly look into it and find out whether or not that's the same program that you're
We've got somebody who was around during those years. Mr. Strom.
Mr. Chair, Senator Weber, that program has traditionally been funded on a prorated basis, but I believe there were 2 years, and we'll check to see which two there were, that the proration was considerably less, that the legislature had a higher amount. It still wasn't fully funded, but I believe there were 2 years when it was more in the $8 million range of funding. And Senate staff and House staff will get that number to you and what years those were, but I don't think it was ever fully funded.
Senator Weber.
Well, thank you, and I would appreciate that. As I remember the discussion from a couple of years ago, it seemed to me, and I have roughly 20, my district has 23 or 4 school districts entirely or partially within my boundaries, but as I remember, the deficit that they were running from what it used to be was in the neighborhood collectively of $250,000. So I don't think we've ever totally made up where we were prior to the cuts of during those deficit years.
Senator Nelson.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. And just to add a little bit more context to this, we had some extensive hearings on the telecommunications and particularly how our schools were accessing the Internet and what the cost was per pupil for each of our school districts to do that. And part of the issue was not fully taking advantage of the E-rates, and we think that there's been an uptick in that. But one of the things that came out of that hearing that I guess we hadn't really expected so much was that while telecommunications, this piece was put in when the Internet was relatively new, and we wanted to encourage districts to join into those clusters to get that lower rate, what we found out in testimony was that in a number of cases, actually, the rate was lower just whether you were part of the telecommunications or not. So in other words, the market rate was lower. And so the intent was to let every school take advantage of the lowest market rates, regardless of whether or not they were in a telecommunications cluster or not.
Okay. Thank you. Who? Ms. Adrians.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, I believe we were moving on to the community education mm-hmm. article. So we are on line 88, so at the very bottom of the second page. Both the House and the Senate, this is a similar provision, changed the education partnership program. The House changes both Tier 1 and Tier 2 in this line because the Senate only adjusts the Tier 2 amount. So this shows just the Tier 2 implementing grants. The House increases the Tier 2 grants by $1.26 million in each biennium, and the Senate increases those same grants by $1.54 million in each biennium. And then if you'll flip to the third page, at the very top on line 89, the House makes some adjustments to the adult basic education formula and also increases funding for adult basic education by $3.8 million in the first biennium and by $4 million in the second, On line 90, this is, as I was saying, the House only changes the Tier 1 grants of the Education Partnership Program. The Tier 1 grants are the St. Paul Promise Neighborhood and Minneapolis's NAS program. So the House increases those by $740,000 in each biennium. And then on line 91, this is a House-only provision. The House bill increases the reimbursement for the high school equivalency tests. The current law, the increase or the reimbursement level is 60%, and the House bill increases that to full reimbursement, so at 100%. And the cost of that is $240,000 in each biennium.
Ms. Hofer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. On line 92 begins the state agencies article, and I'll walk through the similar positions. So on line 92 is for the Department of Education, there's a rider for the Board of School Administrators. In both the House and the Senate, the Board of School Administrators would receive an operating adjustment. And I should note, too, that this change item sheet does only show the general fund impact. So there is a special revenue fund account in the House proposal where the Board of School Administrators is listed. As a result, you don't see their change on the change item sheet. But if you look at the larger state aid sheet, you'll be able to see the appropriation change on there. And I say that because both the House and the Senate did choose to increase the Board of School Administrators' licensure fee from $75 to $100. And so even though that policy change is the same, you don't see the same amounts here for that reason, because the House keeps that in the special revenue fund, while the Senate moves the Board of School Administrators to the general fund where they are in current law. And so as a result of the fee increase, the Senate would increase the Board of School Administrators' budget by $174,000 per year. And as I mentioned, the House increases, in addition to that, the Board of School Administrators' operating budget by $22,000 in the 2021 biennium. On line 93, to the Department of Education, there's an operating adjustment for the litigation fees. So both the House and the Senate would cancel $2 million of what is expected to be unused litigation fees from fiscal year 2019. The House chooses to reappropriate that $2 million and then provide an additional $2.7 million on top of that for a $4.7 million appropriation in the 2021 biennium. And the Senate did not reappropriate the $2 million.
Oh, Representative Pinto, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Can some, maybe Ms. Hofer or somebody else just review the use of those funds for litigation in the House, as somebody who's newer to this?
Thank you.
Ms. Hofer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. With the 2017 session, the governor did, I believe, recommend providing to the Department of Education some funding that would help cover attorney general costs and other legal fees associated with, it was at the time, one court case that the Department of Education was a defendant on. At this point, it's now two court cases that they are being defended for. The reason that the $2 million is going unexpended right now is because it's very difficult to predict how long a court case might go and when any sort of legal action might happen. At the time, the best guess was it would happen within that 18-19 biennium, but the legal proceedings are moving just a little bit slower right now, and as a result, all of those funds aren't expected to be used in fiscal year 2019. However, the Department of Education is still a party to those lawsuits, and as a result, the governor recommended canceling that $2 million and then making it available in the 2021 biennium to help with those attorney general and legal costs.
Representative Pinto.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And so without the funding for that on the Senate side, where would the funding come from? Would it be just a departmental adjustment, I guess, to try to make up those funds, assuming that they are needed?
Ms. Hofer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Pinto. So whenever an agency is party to a lawsuit, unless they receive an additional appropriation from the legislature specifically for legal fees, those costs would come out of their operating budget.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Pinto. Ms. Hofer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. On line 94 we were on is an operating adjustment to the Department of Education. Both the House and the Senate include an operating adjustment. You'll see in the House proposal, the House takes the governor's position and provides just under $3 million in the 2021 biennium and about $3.3 million in the tails to the agency's base. The Senate reduces the agency base by about $3.3 million in the 2021 biennium and then reduces the agency base by about $3.2 million in the tails. On line 95 is an operating adjustment to the Purpich Center for Arts Education. The House took the governor's position and provided an additional $485,000 in the 2021 biennium and an additional $550,000 in the tails. The Senate reduced the budget by $4.89 million in the 2021 biennium and $4.9 million in the tails. And in part, this was because of the conversion of the operating budget from a flat rate set by the legislature to an amount that is a fixed cost formula plus an additional amount per pupil on top of that.
Representative Sandstein.
Is there any more information on the Purpich Center, why such a significant cut?
Ms. Hofer, Senator Nelson.
Yes, we have significant information on that, and I'm glad to be able to either, we can discuss that in more detail later, but the gist is that, as Ms. Hofer said, the Purpich operated just on a flat appropriation from the legislature, regardless of the number of students being served. And they have seen a dramatic reduction in the number of students served. I think they're at probably they've less than we're paying for 30% more students than are there. So what we did is we looked at the OLA report, we looked at extensive information, and developed those one-time those costs that are specific to Purpich that would not be specific to your high school or other high schools, and those are in that base appropriation, that set appropriation for those ongoing costs, whether it be the campus, the maintenance of the dormitories, all of the operation of those. They send teachers out into the rest of the state to provide excellent art education. Those things the normal school districts do not do. So all of those things that are particular to Purpich only are in that base appropriation. However, then the students are being, in our proposal here, being funded on the about the average per pupil student amount. And so as those students would increase to Purpich, that per pupil or the student formula would increase as well. The number of students would also increase, increasing funding as well. So we're just trying to find a sustainable way that Purpich can continue. Currently, it's not very sustainable to have a campus that is continuing to see a drastic declines in students, and yet we're still paying for students that aren't there. So we want, our intent was to keep the Purpich Center operating with those fixed expenses and then allow then allowing it to receive funding on a per pupil basis as those new students come in, as enrollment increases.
Representative Sandstein.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And then just to follow up on that, is there a certain time frame that you're looking at in terms of the declining enrollment that you referenced? Because my understanding is that they had seen it. They had taken significant efforts to kind of turn it around, and those numbers have stabilized, and they're working towards increased numbers.
Senator Nelson?
Thank you, Chair Davney and Representative. We do have all that documentation. I don't have it in my head, but we can definitely provide it for the committee. We can show the enrollment numbers, and we can also show the expenses, and we'll also show what's included in that particular in that base or operating appropriation as well, and also where those numbers came from. So we can provide that for the committee.
Representative Sandstead, anything more? Representative Joaquin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And maybe I don't know if this would be to Mr. Strom or who, but how does that compare to how we fund our other state academies? Do we do that theirs on a per pupil basis?
Who best handles that question? Mr. Strom, your name was mentioned.
Mr. Chair, Representative Joachim, both Purpich Academy and the two Minnesota State Academies for the Deaf and Blind in Faribault are funded on a total appropriations basis. There's a slight modification on the State Academy's funding for some travel costs, and the bill back of one aid to the district and compensatory is calculated at the site. But essentially, both organizations are funded as state institutions or state agencies with a line item, a dollar amount in the budget.
Representative Uwaki?
Thank you, Mr. Strom. I thought maybe we were treating Fairbridge different. I just wanted to confirm. Thank you.
Representative Pinto.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I actually want to go up one line to line 94, the operating adjustment, and just get a little more information about what that I guess I have some guesses as to the effect of that kind of – I just maybe first just understand what that's referring to in terms of the operating adjustment. To whomever can help illustrate.
Ms. Vofer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Pinto. So in the Senate budget proposal, the Department of Education would receive a base operating adjustment. So if you look at the state aid tracking spreadsheet, you can see that there's one line item that's essentially just base funding to cover general operational costs for the agency, along with a couple specific riders. So this reduction would be just to the agency's base budget. It's not to any of the specific riders for the agency.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I guess a follow-up then is, was there discussion about what we would not want the agency to do, sort of how they would I get concerned when we ask the agency to do the same sorts of things but give less money for two reasons. One is just that it seems problematic to begin with, but then also to have the agency make the choice as opposed to having us say what we want to have done and then providing the funding to do it. So was there discussion as to what we'd have the agency not do as a result of giving them that less money than we had planned?
Senator Nelson, I don't know if you want to. I don't know if you want to explain the rationale of the committee as opposed to Ms. Hofer.
I can just give you some very basic things. This was adjusted a little bit on the Senate floor when Senator Frentz added an amendment to take funding from the department to fund the Children's Museum in his district. So there's a little bit of that. And then I'll just give kind of overall, we expect and we know that businesses throughout our state are continuing to increase the production for the same hour or the same dollar. We've continually become more productive in every area, could be because technology allows that. And we would like to see our department as well be able to advance productivity as well. And one of the things that I noticed is in the legislature, anytime we ask our departments to do anything, we get a fiscal note. And I'm going to use one of my, Senator Metzen. One of the things he often said as, we'd have a bill and it'd have a fiscal note and the department would come up and testify on that. I served with, had the privilege of serving with the late Senator Metzen on the Jobs Committee for a number of years. And I'll never forget it. He'd say, well, now how many employees do you have over in that department? And you might remember I asked the department that, too, in one of our committees. How many employees do you have over in that department? Oh, you have 464 employees over in that department. Don't you think that one of those employees might be able to readjust their work to take on this new thing? And so I call that the Metzen mantra. And I do believe it's our duty to encourage our departments to be as lean as possible and to try and increase productivity as much as possible. And I think that, we can hope to see some of that. So I can't give you the exact numbers except for the piece on the museum. That was definitely included in this.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It looks like the piece in the museum was about 100,000 of the 3.3 million, if I'm reading this right. And so, I'm sure we'll continue to have conversations. I guess I understand being efficient and more productive, but it also seems like, well, at the very least, we want to make sure that we're the ones choosing where the department is going to be focusing its efforts as opposed to having them necessarily make that determination. But ongoing conversations for Mr. Chair, so thank you.
Thank you, Representative Pinto.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Nelson.
And just to provide some further context to that, the governor was requesting a 43.3% change to the department, taking the department even lower or higher. Excuse me. The governor's budget increases the department by 43.3%, and in the 2020 and then in 2021 increased by 28.4%. And I believe, again, that we should try and have all of our departments be as productive as possible, run as lean as possible, and put as much money directly into our schools and our students as possible.
Representative Uekeen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just wanted to make sure I was tracking over to the larger spreadsheet so I could see the bottom line numbers. Are we looking at, on the one spreadsheet that's super tiny and hard to read, or super small one, is it line 242? Am I looking at the right one?
Ms. Adrians, Ms. Hofer? Hofer, excuse me. See, I told you I'd get it wrong before long.
Mr. Chair.
Ms. Hofer.
I agree with you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, Representative Uekeen, line 234 is the operating adjustment line that we're referring to in the Senate and the House, where you see that operating adjustment on line 94 of the change item sheet. And then the total department subtotal is on line 242.
Thank you. Just checking. Looked like a really big difference. I just want to make sure I was seeing the real numbers. Thanks.
All right. Thank you. And then back to Ms. Hofer, back to Ms. Adrians. We're getting near the end.
Mr. Chair.
Ms. Adrians.
We are on to the House only provisions on starting on line 96. And this is, so these are provisions that were in the governor's bill as well for different funding initiatives within the agency. So on line 96, there's an increase for data analytics. This is just under $450,000 in the first biennium. And on line 97, this is funding to improve the IT program and data integration. This is $1.6 million in both bienniums. On line 98, this is funding for the agency's mainframe and to provide updates. It's $880,000 in the first biennium, $960,000 in the second. On line 99, this is for a maltreatment investigations program. The funding is just under $700,000 in the first biennium. And then on line 100, a program for the National Board Certified Teachers. It's $280,000 in each biennium. On line 101, this is a program that's currently in existence. It's the Regional Centers of Excellence. This would increase funding for the regional centers $3 million in the first biennium and then an increase of $4 million in the second biennium. On line 102, the agency in the governor's bill made a request for a second chance agency director. The funding for this is $345,000 in the first biennium. On line 103, Turnaround Arts, this is, I believe Chair Nelson was speaking of some of the programming, the statewide programming that the Purpich Center has historically done, and the Turnaround Arts Program is one of them. This moves doing some of that work out of Purpich and into the Department of Education. The funding for this is $280,000 in each biennium. And on line 104, the funding is for the Minnesota State Academies for the Deaf and Blind. They made a request for funding that would enhance services. It's $1.1 million in the first and second bienniums. They also requested funding for an increase in their operating base, just over $1 million in each biennium. On line 106, the State Academies also made a request for funding that would improve their technology. This is just over $1 million in each biennium as well. And on line 107, this is for the Purpich Center for the Arts. They made a request for improvements in technology as well. It's $1.3 million in the first biennium and then $625,000 in the second biennium.
Ms. Hofer.
Mr. Chair, on line 108 is the last of the appropriation changes. It's a Senate-only provision. It would modify the Perpich appropriation and reduce the Crosswinds severance payment rider. So some of you may recall the 2017 education omnibus bill closed the Crosswinds school and as a result provided $2 million for staff severance payments. At this point, we believe that those payments are concluded, and there's about $800,000 remaining in that appropriation that will cancel to the bottom line of the general fund on June 30th of this year. So the Senate proposes canceling those funds. That was also part of the 2018 bill that was vetoed by Governor Dayton. And then we do have the revenue section as well. I'll let Ms. Adrian speak to the House proposal.
Ms. Adrian.
Mr. Chair and members, on line 112, the House bill books savings because of the operating referendum reduction, the $25 million that I referenced earlier in levy reduction. There is a property tax savings that the state would see, and that amount is $1.21 million each year. So in the first biennium, because it starts in fiscal 21, it's $1.2 million in the first biennium and then $2.4 million savings that the House bill claims in the second biennium. And then Ms. Hofer can explain the other.
Ms. Hofer?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As Ms. Adrians had mentioned earlier on the spreadsheet, the Senate carries a similar referendum equalization proposal in the tax bill. And up on the first page, you saw that bracketed amount. And here as well, you'll see bracketed on the Senate side the amount of the tax interaction there as well. So you can see those comparatively to the House proposal. On line 113, I'd mentioned earlier that both the House and the Senate would increase the Board of School Administrators' fee from $75 to $100. This line would show the revenue increase in the House proposal because that's in the Special Revenue Fund. You see that revenue increase to the Special Revenue Fund. In the Senate, you'll see that revenue increase to the General Fund. On line 114 is a Senate-only provision. This would allow the state academies to retain all rental income for professional development purposes. Under current law, a very specific portion, rental income generated off of leased lands and renting out the dormitories, stays in the general fund. All other rental income goes to the special revenue fund to be used for professional development activities. The Senate bill would allow the state academies to retain all of that rental income. And as a result, you'll see a reduction of $6,000 per biennium to the general fund and an increase of $6,000 per year, per biennium to the special revenue fund, and the state academies would then be allowed to use that additional $6,000 per biennium for professional development activities. And then with that, on line 117, you can see the net total for both the House and the Senate. So the net total for the 2021 biennium for the House is $913,760,000, and for the tails is $1,213,991,000. Compared to their target on line 118 of $900,000 in the first biennium and $1,214,314,000 in the tails. For the Senate, the 2021 net total was $228,091,000 compared to the target on line 118 of $211,500,000. And in the tails, the net total of $141,386,000, which was also the budget target. So with that, I believe that concludes our run-through of the spreadsheet.
Ms. Hofer, one question. Ms. Adrians, pardon, but you might get involved. Hang on.
Don't leave.
On line 112, I understand that the Senate does levy equalization in their tax bill, and hence the brackets, and we do it in this bill, hence no brackets.
Right.
We do around $25 million. The Senate, I believe, does around $15 million. But the tax interaction is greater on the Senate side with less equalization. And I just need somebody to walk me through don't walk me through the actual math, please, but.
Mr. Chair, thank you. Both the Senate and the House use the numbers from the Department of Revenue's revenue estimates, and so we plug those in here. While both the Senate and the House do carry referendum equalization bills, the way the equalization is changed is slightly different in each bill. So I believe that is how the Department of Revenue came up with different estimates for the tax impact, even though the amounts were not scalable in the House and the Senate for the tax interaction compared to the referendum equalization amount. And we can certainly send you both the revenue estimates for the Senate's tax bill proposal as well as the House proposal.
Thank you very much. Questions from members? Representative Joachim.
Thank you. And just so I understand, too, since you're booking it, so are you booking the savings in the tax bill then and spending it there and then wondering here for us, are we booking the savings on the tax interactions in our ed bill and spending it here?
Ms. Adrians?
Mr. Chair, Representative Joachim, the House bill has the operating referendum reduction in the bill, and then we also get to claim in the House bill the savings as well from the interaction. And in the tax bill, all of it is contained in their in the Senate tax bill.
Other questions from members on the differences between the House and the Senate provisions? All right, then.
Okay.
Thank you very much, Ms. Hofer and Ms. Adrians.
Mr. Chair, we don't have to do this, but if you'd like, we can quickly run through the levy tracking sheet.
So the House reconvenes at 5. Ms. Adrians, define quickly.
Well, Mr. Chair and members, I don't know that it's entirely necessary because all it reflects is things that we've already spoken about in the change items document. So if you're comfortable with that, we can reference it like it's a backup tracking sheet, just like we spoke of the big state aid tracking sheet. So I don't know that it's entirely necessary, but we're happy to.
All right. Given that we've probably got a few more things to go through, why don't we? We can always come back to it in the future, right? Thank you. So, as I indicated, Senator, we need to reconvene at 5. I'd like to give members a few minutes to cross the street and do what they need to do to be prepared for that. You get the gavel tomorrow.
Yes.
What are your plans?
Mr. Chair and committee, we will meet tomorrow in the same venue, same time, 2 o'clock. So, and we will bring the documents that were requested that will further our discussion. So, thank you very much.
And Madam Chair, what's the agenda for tomorrow?
Tomorrow we will start with our article summaries. The summary will start article by article about kind of the bill summaries, what are in those, the difference between the two bodies.
All right. And members, as the Senator just indicated, we are in this room. This is our permanent room. My understanding is that the room will be locked when not in use, so you may leave your materials here. They'll be secure there. No one will be coming to, I don't know, shoplift your budget books. try to sell them on the street, whatever the street value is of a budget book. All right. With that, we stand adjourned. Thank you very much.